So we're here on Daf Zayin Amud Aleph. Now, hopefully today, we'll at least begin the sugya of Mishloach Manos. And I have something to share with you on that sugya. Let me just open up to the right page.
There must be a light switch somewhere.
Okay, if you want to put lights on, that's up to you. I'm fine with the light that we have, but
I just have to find the place.
Just remember to turn it off after we leave. Okay. We're gonna try to prove today, with five different proofs, that Megillas Esther was written B'Loshon HaKodesh. On Zayin Amud Aleph. So just to quickly review, we had a whole discussion yesterday about whether Megillas Esther is Metamei Asiyadayim, which was a gzera that the Chachamim instituted on any Kisvei HaKodesh. So the question really is whether Esther is part of Kisvei HaKodesh. And even if Esther was Beruach HaKodesh Nemra, but that's only, according to Shmuel at least, that's only for purposes of Kriya, but not for purposes of Ksiva. Which means that we could read the entire story of the Megillah Baal Peh, but it remains Torah Shebaal Peh. It's not elevated to the status of Torah Shebichsav. And then the Gemara asks a kasha on Shmuel, because amongst these many different shitos about whether or not certain Megillos have the status of Kisvei HaKodesh or don't, it seems that there was never a debate about the status of Esther, that Megillas Esther was in fact part of Kisvei HaKodesh. Nobody debates that. There was a debate about Koheles, for example. Rav Meir held that Koheles is not part of Kisvei HaKodesh. We'll see also that Rav Shim ben Manasseh holds that Koheles is not part of Kisvei HaKodesh. It's just Chachma of Shlomo. There's going to be a debate perhaps about Shir HaShirim. Rav Yossi insists that Shir HaShirim is part of Kisvei HaKodesh, it's Metami Siyadayim, but Rav Meir says that's a machlokus between Beis Hillel Beit Shammai, in which case Beit Shammai hold that Shir HaShirim is not part of Kisvei HaKodesh. Beis Hillel says it is part of Kisvei HaKodesh, but everybody agrees that Esther is Metamei Siyadayim. There's never a machlokas tanoim about Esther, and this is a stira to Shmuel, because Shmuel is the one who says that Esther is not Metamei Siyadayim. So the Gemara answers that Shmuel actually stands on the shoulders of Rabbi Yoshua, and he holds that it's only Shilashim, right? The Pasuk in Mishle, Shalishim velo Revim, Rebeim. And you can't have a fourth mention of Amalek. Okay, fine. That's where we were up to yesterday. So what we're up to today is Tanya Rabbi Eliezer Omer. So see if you could find that. Yes, no, maybe so?
Not yet.
Not yet? Tanya Rabbi Eliezer Omer. In my Gemara, it's about, I would say, maybe 15 lines up from the bottom of the page. The first word in the line is Tanya. Or let's say it this way, before the wide lines in the bottom, if you count up around 10 lines, you'll see a line that starts with Tanya. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Esther Beruach HaKodesh Nemra. How do we know, how can I prove to you that Esther was Beruach HaKodesh?
That's right, okay.
Shenemar Vayomer Homan Belibo. Lemi Yachbo Tzamelech Lasos Yikar Yoser Mimeni. In other words, the Megillah testifies as to what Haman was thinking in his heart. Now, how could anyone, anyone but Ruach HaKodesh, how is it possible to know what Hava was thinking in his heart? So let's just recapture the scene, if you will. We're talking about the sixth chapter of Esther, and Haman shows up, if you remember, in the middle of the night, and Ahasuerus says, what should I do with a person? How do I respect or give tremendous dignity to a person who I would like to give, you know, yikar to? And the Megillah testifies that Haman thought in his heart that he had, that he, Ahasuerus, had him, meaning Haman himself, in mind. That can only be through Ruach HaKodesh. That's the first proof of Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Akiva, I have a different proof. Esther Baruach HaKodesh Nemro, Shenemar, Vatehi Esther Nose Schein Bi'ene Kolro Eha. And this is in the second chapter of Esther, after they got rid of Vashti. They were checking out the various maidens to see who would be chosen by the king. And in this case, Esther found favor in the eyes. Now here we have to emphasize the word kol ro'eha. Every single person who laid eyes on her, she found favor in his eyes. How could anybody say kol ro'eha? You know, you can't know that everybody loves this girl, right? You can only know that based on Ruach HaKodesh. Rabbi Meir Omer has a different proof. Esther b'Ruach HaKodesh nemar shenemar vayivoda hadover leMordechai. This is the story at the very beginning of the Megillah, which is in actually the second chapter, when Mordechai discovers the plot of Bigson Viserys, that they want to execute the king. Now, how could Mordechai know such a thing? It must have been that he had Ruach HaKodesh. And here Rabbi Meir is making a little bit of a jump. He's saying that if Mordechai was operating in the context of the events with Ruach HaKodesh, then it's logical to assume that the Megillah that he participated in writing was also written in Ruach HaKodesh. Now, there's a pasuk in the ninth chapter of Megillas Esther. It says, Vayichtov Mordechai, and then it says, Vatichtov Esther. And it would seem that if Mordechai had Ruach HaKodesh, then when it says Vayichtov Mordechai, the Ksiva was also Ruach HaKodesh. And that gives it the status of Ksuvim. However, there's a question here, which is attributed to the Achronim. Ma raya mizeh shel Mordechai Ruach HaKodesh, shegam ha-Megillah nemra b'Ruach HaKodesh. No question about it, Mordechai had Ruach HaKodesh, but who says that the Megillah itself was written b'Ruach HaKodesh? Does the fact that Mordechai had Ruach HaKodesh ipso facto prove that the Megillah was written b'Ruach HaKodesh? So that's the question of the Achronim. I'll just see if I can give you perhaps one approach to this. This is from the Yaros Dvash, that's Rabbi Yonasan Ivish's. He says that if it were so that the Megillah lo haisa nichtava b'Ruach HaKodesh, he's arguing from the opposite position, then Mordechai atzmo lo haya kosev, Mordechai himself would not have written in the Megillah vayivada adover leMordechai b'Megillah. That would be a certain kind of arrogance on his part, to incorporate into this text, which we call Torah Shebaal Peh. It's not yet, we haven't proven that it's Torah Shebichsan. So he's going to write Vayivoda Dovah LeMordechai. It's like he's showing off, and he's publicizing that he had Ruach HaKodesh. So that's not something that Mordechai would have written. So who wrote it, or why was it written? If it's not Derech HaNova for Mordechai to read it, it must be that this was commanded by Hashem through Ruach HaKodesh, that this has to be written. Mordechai, on his own initiative, would never have written it. So that's Rabbi Yonasan Ivish's. Then he quotes here the Chassam Sofer, and he says that the pasuk zeh yesh lo chiyach rak shamagila nemra likros beruach hakodesh. Aval adayin, morning. Adayin lo einanu yodim she nemra likase beruach hakodesh. We pasuk zeh yesh lo chiyach she nemra likase beruach hakodesh. Im rak nemra beruach hakodesh l'saper asanes b'chol pratov, as we call the Torah Shebal Peh, eich rabbanan tiknu likro ulesaper psukim shalom uvuaram behem eich noda adover l'mordechai. He's saying like this, if we were to take the position that the Megillah is only Torah Shebal Peh, then it wouldn't make sense that the Megillah would just say vayivoda adover l'mordechai without explaining how he knew about it. Because Torah Shebal Peh requires a certain question and answer to clarify the understanding. So you can't just say, well, Mordechai heard about it. That doesn't make any sense. Mordechai knew about it. You'd have to explain how he knew about it. But if it's part of the Megillah, then the Torah is telling you, the Tanakh is telling you, Baruch HaKodesh, he knew about it. And now we're up to Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi ben Durmaskis Omer, Esther Baruch HaKodesh Nemar. How do I know that Esther was written Baruch HaKodesh and Nemar? Now we're talking about the battle of Bnei Yisrael up and down the 127 provinces of Achashverosh. This is of course at the end of the Megillah, after Mordechai was appointed already the Mishnah of Achashverosh. So it says over there in the Pasuk, Ubabiza lo sholchu es yadav, that the Jewish people did not extend their arms, so to speak, to take any of the booty. Now, how would you write such a thing? You know, there were 127 provinces spread out throughout the globe. How would you know that if there's not a single Jew somewhere in a far-flung place that didn't enjoy the benefit of the booty? It must have been written Baruch HaKodesh. So again, we have to summarize what we saw, four proofs. One is from the fact that the Megillah testifies about Haman, that he knew, that he thought that Achashverosh had him in mind. How would we know such a thing? We're not mind readers. The second proof is from the fact that everyone found, you know, Esther found favor in everyone's eyes. The third proof is the fact that Mordechai knew about the plot to kill Achashverosh. And the fourth proof is from the fact that not one single Jew stretched his arm out to enjoy the benefits of the booty. Amar Shmuel, now we're up to number five. Now notice, until this point, we're dealing with Tanoim. Shmuel is an Amora. So Shmuel, with great humility, says, Ihavi Hasam, if I would have been amongst the Tanoim, and they would have asked me to prove that Esther was written in Baruch HaKodesh, Avamin, I would have said, Milsa Dadifa Mikulu. Now he gives himself a pat on the shoulder and he says, I would have given an even a better answer. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, this is at the end of the Megillah in Perek Tes, it says, Kimu v'kiblu, I'm going to read the whole Pasuk, Kimu v'kiblu ha-Yehudim lios osim v'shnei ha-yomim ha-eila. Now Shmuel says there's something odd about the sequence of these two words, Kimu v'kiblu. Logically, you should have said first Kiblu, and only then Kimu. If they accepted it upon themselves, Leos Osim et Shnei Yom Eilu to commemorate Purim, then after Kiblu, you could say Kimu, and they implemented it. So therefore, this has to be darshaned. We have to come up with a new insight that would justify the fact that it says Kimu first, and then Kiblu second. So Shmuel's drush is the following. Kimu lemala. Notice they agreed up in Shamayim. Masha kiblu lemata. What they accepted down on earth. And included in this is the Megillah. Now, how do we know that it included in this is the Megillah? So Rashi adds a little bit more of this pasuk. At the end of the pasuk it says, Kiksavam ukizmanam. Now the word zmanam refers to the 14th and the 15th of Adar. But what's the word kiksavam? And the answer is that the Megillah was written in what's called ksav ashuris. And ksav ashuris is the ksav that's required for any Megillah that's part of Tanakh, that's going to be read publicly. And we only saw part of the drashi of Shmuel. In the Gemara itself, without Rashi, we wouldn't have known the last part of the pasuk, which is perhaps even more important than the first part. That when it says kimu lamala mashikibu lamata, it means kiksavam ukizmanim, and kiksava means the writing of the Megillah. So the writing of the Megillah is part of Tanakh, was accepted by Shamayim. Omar Rava, Rava says, Lekulu islu pircha. In the four drushas of the Tanoim, each one is vulnerable to a counter-argument. Lebarmid is Shmuel to Leslie Pircha. The best one of them all is Shmuel. The Gemara later is going to coin a phrase. How could it be that Shmuel, who's an Amora, you know, outdistanced all the Tanoim? So the Gemara is going to quote an idiomatic phrase to explain that. Now let's go through all four Pirchos. Number one, Rabbi Eliezer, how could it be that we knew what Haman was thinking in his heart? And the answer is Svarahu. I don't need Ruach HaKodesh for that. It's simple logic. There was no one in the entire king's palace of Achashverosh who had the same chashivus as Haman. So therefore, if Achashverosh is asking Mi Aisha Sharmel Chavetz Bikoro, certainly Haman thought it was himself. Vahai ki kamafish tuva viomar adaiti dinafshi kamar. Notice from the fact that Haman would add, take the lavush and take the malchus and the keser and take the horse that he that the melech. All this is all indicative of the fact that adaiti dinafshi kamar, that this is Haman's dream, that this recommendation that he's giving to Achashverosh will be fulfilled with him himself. Adaiti d'nafshe ka'amar. Where is that noise coming from? Outside? But I'm saying it's in the room or outside?
The next door.
Oh, so I could close the
door. No, the other door. The inside door.
Somewhere inside.
Oh, on the inside.
That's what I was asking you. I guess you didn't stop my question. Okay. Then, the second drasha was that of Rabbi Akiva. Uda Rabbi Akiva, he says, how could it be that she found favor? Who could testify that she found favor in everyone's eyes? Dilma ki Rabbi Elazar, maybe we could have come to this conclusion based on a statement of Rabbi Elazar. And we don't need Ruach HaKodesh for this. Di Omar, later on at Daf Yud Gimel, Rabbi Elazar is going to interpret the Pasuk Vatehi, Esther no seis chen b'ene koro el, right? That's the pasuk that we're dealing with. Molamed shekol echad v'echad nidmiso lo ke'umah. So you remember that Achashverosh did not know exactly which nation Esther belonged to. And Rabbi Elazar says that everyone thought ke'umah, so that she must belong to his umas, right? There were 127 provinces, many different umos, and each person from his respective umah thought, oh, she must be from my nation. And the reason why each one came to that conclusion is because she was matzah chen b'ene kulam. Everybody wanted to, to claim, oh, she's from my country, from my nationality. The Mefarshim add something very important here. They say that Achashverosh made a statement, he made a declaration, and this is quoted in the Targum on Yonasan. I'm sorry, the Targum on Esther. Achashverosh was trying to influence Esther to reveal her nation, her moledes. And he offered her the following, according to the Targum, he offered her the following allurement. He says to her, you know what? Anybody from your nation, I'm going to treat them in a very special way. I'll make them into duchsin. Duchsin are sarim, hegemonim, leaders in the country. And therefore, everyone came along, looked at Esther, and said, "Hey, you know what? She belongs to my umma, so that maybe they'll, Achashverosh will be malamiligdula. He'll give me a special position in the government." And therefore, she was matzachein beinayim, and she found favor in the eyes of everyone. Everyone was claiming her for them, that she belongs to me. So, based on this statement of Rabbi Elazar, we could derive the conclusion of Rabbi Akiva that b'enei kol ro'eh is absolutely true. Each person who saw Esther had a vested interest in wanting to claim her. And we don't have to assume that Esther was written Baruch HaKodesh. So that's the Pirchon Rabbi Akiva. Now we're up to Rabbi Meir of Vayivada Adavali LeMordechai. Oh, Vehod Rabbi Meir, I also have a Pirchon that. It says that Mordechai knew about Big Son Viserys' plot to kill the king. Dilma ki Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Diomar, Big Son Viserys Shnei Tarsiim Hayu. In other words, they spoke the language of the Tarsiim, which is called Tarsi. Mordechai was a member of the Sanhedrin. He was an expert in 70 Lashonos. He overheard when they were speaking in Tarsi. It doesn't have anything to do with Ruach HaKodesh. He knew the language. Veha de Rabbi Yossi bar Duskamis. This also we have a pircha on Rabbi Yossi. Why? Because Rabbi Yossi says, how can we possibly testify the Babiza lo Sholchu es Yodam that there's no far flung Jew somewhere far away that took some booty? Dilma Pristike Shadur. It could very well be possible that Pristike, meaning Shluchim, that there was actually a supervision. They sent out Shluchim to check and see and make sure that nobody took any of the biza. And the reason for that is because we're talking about the mitzvah of Milchemes HaMolek, and with regard to Milchemes HaMolek, we're not allowed to take any biza. So it could be that there was actual supervision and they got the word back that nobody took from the biza, that everyone complied with the mandate not to take from the biza. Oh. However, with regard to Shmuel, there's no pircha. In other words, that since Shmuel says that it says that his, you know, kimu v'kiblu, meaning kimu lamala mashe kiblu lamata kiksavam, it means that kiksavam was accepted lamala. That gives the gushpanka, that gives the certification of upgrading Esther to the status of what? Of Kisvei HaKodesh. Now the truth of the matter is, as Tosus points out, Dibra Maska Lekulu, there is a Pirchon Shmuel, even though the Gemara seems to be totally oblivious to it. And the reason for that is because of another statement of Rava, and this appears in the middle of Masechet Shabbos, and Rava has a whole different take on the Pasuk Kimu V'Kiblu. And he says, this is one of the most famous drashas of Purim, relevant to Purim, Shekiblu, meaning they accepted the Torah, Shenis, the second time around, Bimei HaShverosh. What does that mean, a second time around? What was lacking in the first acceptance of the Torah?
Acceptance of willingness.
Correct. It was not with willingness because it was correct. It was kafol em harkigigis. So Rava's, so the Gemara asked me, "Kan modar rival or rice?" So we can, you know, if you force me into a sale, I'm allowed to be moser modar. Then I give the edim a document that says I was compelled into this, and that would completely undermine the deal. So the kabbalah of Nasa v'Nishma is not really a reliable kabbalah. So Rava says they hader kiblu b'me'ach hashverosh. So it means that if we need this pasuk for a different drasha of kimu v'kiblu, then we don't have the pasuk free for Shmuel's drasha. So Tosa says that, how can you say therefore that Shmuel has no pircha? Yesh lomar d'lo choshev hai pircha. That's not considered a pircha. Why not? D'ashaper shamina m'nei tarte. That we can really derive two things. In other words, as far as the fact that that they reaccepted the Torah a second time around, it didn't have to say it in that specific sequence of kimu and then kiblu, so that we can still have from the sequence of the words a drush of kimu mashe kimu lamala mashe kiblu lamata.
So, just by svara, you could say, if let's say you hold of the pshat that it's kimu that because of the we're just saying that there is, we now know that they kiblu the Klal Yisrael and Makabel Baratzim. For that, you need Ruach Kodesh to know that all the Klal Yisrael do that. So you have to know that it's already just by that alone to say such a svara. You're saying that it's Midaraisa. I think
excellent. Again, I'm assuming just to defend Tosus, because otherwise Tosus Kasha falls off, that what he meant was that there was actually a Kabbalah. It's the Jewish people declared we're accepting.
Okay.
But I think your pshat is very good. Omar Avinu. after this whole presentation of Rava that Shmuel wins the day and Shmuel is the only invincible drasha, so Avina coins or at least he quotes an idiomatic phrase: "Hainu diamri inchi tova chada pilpula charifta mimola tsani kore." So let's take this apart. Tova means it's better. Chada pilpula, one piece of pepper, one little sharp pepper, adds more to the tavshil when you cook it. Mimole tsani kari. Now mole tsani is referring to a massive volume, and kare is referring to a delas, a pumpkin or some sort of a gourd, is called in Lashon Aramit, is called a kare. You may have seen that in other sugyas and shas. Oh. So it means that even though the pilpil is very small in volume, you know, compare a small piece of pepper, a black pepper, let's say, to a large pumpkin, but nevertheless, because the pilpil has this charifus to it, then it is superior to any tavlinim, you know, to any other spices that you put in, and has a more powerful impact. So Shmuel is relative to the Tanoim, you can call him a small katan, right? In comparison to the Tanoim. And yet, his drush is sharper than all the drushes of the Tanoim. There's a whole discussion here, which I'm not going to get into, about a delas, whether a delas really enhances the tavshil, doesn't enhance the tavshil.
But it's the essence of the tavshil. I think that's what he's saying. You have all these good things, and all these good things that, you know, you have pumpkin pie, but without the cinnamon spice, it doesn't make it taste like pumpkin pie. Huh?
Right.
Whatever.
Just had Thanksgiving.
I know, that's why.
Rav Yosef Amar Mehocha. Rav Yosef has his own proof that Esther was written by Ruach HaKodesh. And this is because the Megillah is going to predict something for all generations to come. And the Pasuk says, V'yemeya Purim ha'elu lo yavru mitocha yehudim. That Purim will never be lost amongst the Jewish people, always be observed. In fact, there's another statement in Chazal many of the Mo'adim were Asidim Libotel and not Purim. Again, that has to be understood exactly what that statement means. But Purim was accepted for all generations. Now, how could the person who writes a Megillah possibly know that Lo Yavra Mikol Mitocha Yehudim, that there'll never be a termination of Purim? It must be that it was written Beruach HaKodesh. Rav Nachman has his own explanation. Rav Nachman Yitzchak Omer Mehocha. This is the next part of the same pasuk. It says, "V'zichram lo yosuf mizaron," and the maintenance of remembering this day and observing this day will never be posek mizar. It will always be in the Jewish nation for all generations. Okay, at this point, we want to start the sugya of Matanos Levyona Mishloach Monos. I have here a Simon Chavtes, which I wanted to share with you, but for some reason I must have taken this out of order here. Just give me a minute to see if I could possibly figure out where I put this. I hope I didn't lose it. You know, the trouble is I don't have a binder. That's my problem. Simon. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe it's in this pile. Just give me a second here, Simon. What did I just say? Chavtes? Yeah, Chavtes. Okay, let's see if I have Chavtes here. Okay. Oh, Simon Chavtes. All right, I'm going to have to take some time and organize my papers here because I see I messed up the order here. All right. Now, let's go through first the psukim in the ninth chapter of Esther that describe what exactly Purim is all about. And in Megillas Esther, Mordechai writes a letter to the Jewish people. And what's his goal? What's his agenda? L'kayim aleihem Lios osim es yom arbos o lechodesh adar v'es yom chavish osor bo lasos osom yimei mishte v'simcha u'mishloach manos ish l're'ehu u'matanos l'evyonim. So we're going to notice here that with regard to mishloach manos, the singular is used, ish l're'ehu, whereas with regard to matanos l'evyonim, it says evyonim in the plural. Tani Rav Yosef, u'mishloach manos ish l're'ehu, shtei manos, right, it says manos in the plural, so minimum the minimum of plural is always two, but l'ish echad, it's enough that you send it to one person. Because it says l're'ehu. L're'ehu means his friend in the singular. U'matanos levyonim ishtei matanos, because again, the word matanos is plural, but here it's l'shnei b'nei yodim. You have to find two aniyim because it says evyonim. So both matanos is b'loshen rabim and evyonim is b'loshen rabim. So in the case of monos, you have to send to one person, but it's got to be monos. So you're sending two monos to one person. In the case of matanos, since evyonim means you're sending it to two people, then all you have to give is one matana to each of the two people. Now, we don't know what the minimum shear of matana is. In the case of monos, the Gemara is going to discuss, you know, what happens if you take cooked food or non-cooked food, or if you take two foods and you cook them together, is that considered two monos? That's going to be a lot of discussion about that. And at the same time, with regard to matanos evyonim, we have to ask ourselves, what is the minimum shear of a matanos? So I don't know if I give a pruta, or I have to give something more significant, and that has to be analyzed. So what I want to tell you here is the following. The Beis Yosef in Simon Tuf Reish Tzadi He asks the following question. Good morning, how are you? He says the following, that it seems from Rashi, we'll get to Rashi very soon, the Mirtz Hashem, that I could send you Mishloach Manos, and then in the following year, you send it to me. And if we have such an agreement, then that itself is a kiyum of Mishloach Manos. Ze ochelim ze bepurim shel shana zu, u'bishniya soed chavero imo. So imagine the following. I invite you to my Sudas Purim this year, and you invite me, you reciprocate and invite me next year. And Rashi seems to say that that's a fulfillment in the midst of Ish L'Re'ehu. So the Beis Yosef says, V'im Tomar, how could this be possible? Came lo yimakayim in mitzvah v'shloach manos Ish L'Re'ehu. On any particular year, there was no kiyum of v'shloach manos. The fact that next year you'll invite me back, that counts on the cheshbon of next year. He says, V'im Tomar, shayu sholchim manos Ish L'Re'ehu. He says that if they actually swap matanos back and forth, then what's the chiddush? So here he quotes a Truma Sadeshen, that what's the reason for Mishloach Manos? Kidei she'ei l'chol echad dai v'sapek, meaning enough and even more, l'kayim sudas purim. So this is a fascinating idea that Mishloach Manos is connected to Sudas Purim, to Mishne V'Simcha. It's not a separate, independent mitzvah. And he quotes the Gemara to prove this, the Trumas Hadeshen, because the Gemara tells us later on that Abai Bar Oven v'Rav Chanina Bar Oven avi michlefei sudasayu ba'adadi. Right? That they swapped their Suuda one to the other, v'nafke, and they fulfilled their mitzvah of Mishloach Manos. Alma, it's not just coincidental that they were giving part of their Seuda one to the other. Alma the Taimah, the reason for Mishloach Manos is Mishum Seudahu. So both said, let's just take a break for a minute before we see the Magen Avraham. What would you say? I'm offering two definitions of Mishloach Manos. And what I'm looking for is an afkamino. One definition of shalach manos, it's a separate independent mitzvah. I want to show you my love, and I want to get friendly with you and clinch the friendship, and so forth and so on. The other way of saying it, no, it's part of the suda. What might be the nafkamina between the two? Don't all answer at once.
What you send.
Yeah, if you're sending something for the suda, then it should be what? It should be royal suda. For example, some poskim say that you should send cooked food and not raw food. Because raw food is not royal suda. It's like books on Shabbos, you know, it's not royal lachila. If on the other hand the mitzvah is independent, it's just a matter of reus. So either of you know what, if I send you a large piece of frozen meat or frozen salmon, if you're a salmon lover, and you want to cook it the way you want to cook it, you know, that you're even happier. You know, there's so many issues, you know, if you cook it for me, and you know, did you have the same standards of kashrus, and what about your oven? So I don't want to get into all that. Just give me a good frozen piece of meat. Or
good hashka.
So in this case, you know, by requiring it in the way the Truma Sadesh says it, to prepare the Suda, then you're being machmir, you're sort of restricting what would constitute a qualify as Mishloach Monos. So he says the following. The Truma Sadesh testifies to a minhag that apparently was commonplace in his time, and he objects to this minhag. He says, Umasha b'nei Adam noagim l'shloch l'chavrein b'purim chalukim usdinim. You know, you send a beautiful dress or a beautiful tablecloth or a sheet for the, you know, today there's a whole industry, you know, of sdinim. Well, what's the famous, there's a famous store in America, a chain store, you know, that you buy all the fancy bed, you know, the bed coverings.
Ben and Beyond?
Ben and Bath and Beyond, right.
Beyond is important because they sell a lot of other junk.
So imagine, Eric, I could send you a piece of gefilte fish that's worth $1 and fulfill the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos. It says in Truma Sadesh, I could go into Bed, Bath and Beyond and spend $1,000, get you the most beautiful, you know, bedding set, you know, or whatever it might be, and I'm not yotz in the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos. So then, it really takes on a whole different, because again, if you ask me about cementing friendship, I would think that if I spent $1,000, yeah, wow.
Matanot Lev Yamim is supposed to also be for the meal, but there, I mean, is it like there, if you give them
Right.
Bang, that actually might be more useful.
Yeah, I never heard, Eric, maybe you'll prove this to me, but I never heard that Matanos of Yonav has anything to do with the Suda.
I thought that it's supposed to also be connected.
I don't know if
you're thinking more schitim.
But you know what, Eric, maybe you're right and I'm wrong. You know, we're mamish at the very beginning of this sugya, and at least in the Truma Sadesh's perspective, when you talk about Suda, you're talking about Mishloach Manos.
Right.
Now take a look at the Rambam's language. The Rambam says, "V'chayev lishloach shtei manos shel basar, shtei manos shel basar." The Rambam says, "O shtei mine tavshil, o shtei mine ochlim." And then the Rambam goes on. He says, "V'matonas levyonim mos." Oh, mini machol. You know, here the Rambam gives you two options. Says the Truma Sadesh, from the language of the Rambam, that the Rambam in his list of options for Mishloach Manos leaves it exclusively to foodstuff, whether it's basar, shnei mini tavshil, shnei mini ochlin. The Rambam is clearly indicating that Mishloach Manos is connected to the Suda. But in the case of Atonis of Yonah, he gives you the option. In fact, it's the first option on the list of sending Mos. So the Magen Avraham, based on this Truma Sadesh, says the following: Nire, Misha Ochel al Shulchan Chavero. Okay, in other words, he's a guest in someone's house. So wait a minute, I'm not sure. give me a second here. I want to make sure. Who's the Magen Avraham talking about now? The host or the guest? Let's see. I'm going to read the Magen Avraham. Misha ochel al shulchan chavero means he invited someone to his family. Is he eating at his family? Yeah, but listen to the next line. He says, lo hechen lo klum.
Yeah, I didn't bring anything.
Is potem im shloch manos. That's wild. Just because I'm a guest in your house, I have for the Suda's Purim.
Yeah, I'm sure it's not the other way around.
That's what I'm saying. It would have made more sense had he said Misha Machil as Chavero. But then he says Velo Hechel Klum. So he must be referring to the guest, right?
Right.
Is Potami Lishloch Manos. So the Prima Gadim is a super commentary on the Magen Avraham. I mean, on many different poskim, but also on the Magen Avraham. And he writes the following. That the Magen Avraham is coming to answer the question of the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef attacked Rashi. Rashi said that two people, Reuven and Shimon, could each fulfill the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos because Reuven invites Shimon this year and Shimon reciprocates the next year. Eich yotza sheni yideichol vaso. How could Shimon be yotze on the first round? V'lo sholach sudosol chavero. V'eich yotza yidei Mishloach Manos chavero. Says the Prima God, and that's what the Magen Avraham wants to answer. Lazet tirei shekeven shel lo heichin li atzmo klum potter.
Because
what does that mean? Shekeven shel lo heichin li atzmo klum potter. Just give me one more minute.
Keven
shel lo heichin li atzmo klum. Believe it or I'll photocopy this for you. He says keven shel lo heichin li atzmo klum potter. And he says, "Biur hadavar." Let's explain it. Al pima shekosva chumas avesh the time lishloach manos mishum seudahu ulakach shehizmin chavero yotza afagav shelo sholach manos lechavero.
Ah,
so he's learning that it's the host.
Oh, it's not right.
Ah, so let's go back to the language of the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham says, "Lo heichin lo klum." He means he didn't.
He didn't say anything extra.
Exactly. Yeah, he didn't prepare anything specially.
So having him at the meal is enough.
Excellent. Having him at the meal is enough. So let's read it again. Kishehizmin chavero, yotzi yidei chovoso, afagav, delo sholach manos lechavero, demaliim sholach manos, o maliim mazmin lahachilo al shulchano. Okay, we're still not. We're rounding second base, maybe, but we're not at home plate yet. Because again, we still don't understand how Shimon is yotze the mitzvah. He was the guest. Lefi zed the kol yisod mitzvahs mishloach manos who kideshi eicha vero sipuk lekayim asa'udu yesh lomar delochal olav chiyuv liros shalachavero yesuda rak im hu biatzmo oses asuda. I think what he's saying is that the host is the one who is providing the suda, and therefore the guest doesn't have any chiyuv to provide a suda for his host. So Shimon, even by being a guest in Reuven's house, has fulfilled the mitzvah. Or I wouldn't have said I think he's going a little bit far here. He's saying he fulfilled the mitzvah. I would have said at least he's not chayav in the mitzvah. And he says the following: the mitzvah suda didei nichlal. Sheyira gam chavero yelo suuda, amakoshlo osa suuda liatzmo. Right, if he's the guest, then he's not making a suuda. So the mechayev of mishloach manos is the fact that I'm eating a suuda. But if I'm not eating a suuda because in this case I'm the guest, here he says lo chalal of chiyuv liros sheyir lechavero suuda, umemel lo chalal of chiyuv mishloach manos. So again, the way we were. Again, Rabbi Say, we'd have to really go through all the sources inside, and that's, in the framework of our short amount of time, I don't know if we can do this, but the way he's interpreting it is that when Shimon gets invited to Reuven, it means he's not obligated in Suda's Purim.
Right.
And if he's not obligated in Suda's Purim, he's not obligated in Mishloach Manos. What I mean, again, let me not go too far here. It's not that he's not obligated in Suda's Purim, but that he's not obligated to set up a Suda's Purim. He doesn't have to organize a Suda's Purim. And if he doesn't have to organize a Suda's Purim, he doesn't have to be machalik, he doesn't have to give a portion of his Suda's Purim to Reuven in this case. This is fascinating.
On making a Suda. That
matonos of yonim what?
Sorry, Mishloach Manos is it's only if you're making a meal do you have an obligation.
Correct. Because once you have a meal, now the Torah says, take from your meal and see to it that your friend also has a meal. But if you're the guest and you don't have a meal, then you're not obligated in Suda's form. Again, Rav Osa, we're touching at the tip of the iceberg here, but... Okay. Let's go on, Rav Osa. Rav Yehuda Nisiyah, now the Gemara tells a story. Shadar Leh L'Rav Oshia, he sends Rav Oshia on Purim, Atma Di Igla Tlosa. Now again, I can't explain this to you biologically. If somebody could Google this, and maybe somewhere in the books you'll find this, that when a cow gives birth, so she gives birth to one calf, that's calf number one, the first calf, then the second calf, then the third calf. The third calf has a part of its body that's very, very tasty. And it became a delicacy. It's, some people love corned beef, or I don't know, what are the special, or geese, the different things that people like. Geese, by the way, is a little bit of a kashrus problem, because apparently in many cases they force feed geese in order to make them a little fatter, and that makes it into a treifa. So I'm not telling you to eat geese, but and there's something called treifen, where they eat what's called sirloin or stuff like that.
They take out, but only in Eretz Yisrael, right?
In Eretz Yisrael you can get it almost anywhere. Right here in the Tachana, there's a place called Lechem Ubasar, and if you're Sfaradi, you can have a blast over there. If you're Ashkenazi, you're in trouble. But in any event, so let's get to the point here. So what was sent by Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah? He sent him Atma. Now Atma is an Aramaic word, and it means the yerech, the thigh, of Igla Tlosa. Igla Tlosa means the third egel, the third calf that's born to its mother. And that has a very special taste to it. Now wait a second. L'chora, we just finished saying that Matanos L'Avyonim require two monos, correct? And that's why the Torah uses the plural monos. So you have to read the next line in the Gemara. And it says, V'garva de chamra. Garva is what's called a barrel, and chamra is wine. And we have now both meat and wine. So there are two points that we have to make over here. Point number one is that it's not enough to send one mana, even though he sent them a very great delicacy, but it's still one mana. You can cut it up into smaller pieces, that's fine, but it's one mana right now. And the Aruch, Rav Nosson Baal Aruch, who lived even before Rashi, he writes that the first vlad, the first calf, is kachush b'yoser. It's very lean. Havlad Hasheni tov yoser is a little bit better, but adayin ain't a muvchar. It's not the best. V'il Havlad Hashlishi, the third one, is muvchar b'yoser. There's a restaurant here in town called Hess's. Have you ever heard about it? Yeah, so he's a Swiss guy who, he has a tradition on meat that goes back, 100 years, So, if you want to get all these special delicacies. But that's not enough, because that's only one mana.
Is this three, a cow that gives birth to three, which is not usually the case, or is this the third, her third birth?
Third birth. I don't know that it's unusual. I can't tell you the average cow.
Just looked it up on Google and there's no information on there, so that's not...
That's what I'm telling you. I didn't think that you'd find anything here. But that's what it comes... Anyway,
third child.
It could be that there's something metaphysical going on. I don't know. But anyway, that's not enough. He's got to add another mana. And then there's a second point to be made here, that one of the two manos, and maybe even both, I don't know, could be a liquid. Because right now we would have said that a mana is a solid and not a liquid. Sholach Leh. Now here, we're going to turn to Daf Zayin Amid Beis. Sholach Leh means Rav Oshia is sending a message back to Rav Yehuda Nisiyah. Kiyamta Banu Rabbeinu. You have fulfilled our master, you have fulfilled Banu with us. Umishloach manos ishlere ehu. Shtei manos. Why? Because the egel, the yerech shel egel, is one mana, and the chavis yayin is another mana. So what's the chiddush here? I mean, he has to send it back that you fulfilled through us by our receiving this gift, Mishloach Manos. So the Pri Chodesh says, Kavanos L'Chadish V'lo M'shesh Siyah B'chlal Achila. So that's very interesting, because in certain halachas we need a special drasha to prove that even shesia is included under achila. Like, for example, if you learn the last parak of Yuma, and the question is, you know, in the Isur of Inu, you're not allowed to eat on Yom Kippur, what about drinking? And the Gemara has to prove through psukim that shtiyah is bechlal achila. So you don't know if that's a separate din in Yom Kippur, or that's a general universal din. Here it seems that it's a universal din, and as far as Mishloach Manos is concerned,
well,
a liquid is enough.
Universal as far as Mishloach Manos is not necessary. It's still not clear.
Right, but again, he doesn't have a pasuk for Mishloach Manos. So the Pri Chodesh's language is that Shesia Bechlal Achila. Only one place, to the best of my knowledge, is the Gemara established that Shesia is Bechlal Achila. You know, that's a principle that's being applied. And shall I say, the analogy here is between Shesia Bechlal Achila, which is halacha in Inui on Yom Kippur, and Mishloach Manos.
There, but
okay, now in the back here, he has some discussion about shesia as far as drinks are concerned for Mishloach Manos. I know people, by the way, who are very makpid on this. They will not include shesia in Mishloach Manos. You know, they may add a drink, but that's above and beyond the two Manos. So let me just read to you something here. Just one second. Where is it? Oh, let's see if I find it here. Kosava Pri Chadosh. Shechide Shav Oshia. Lomar. Shefshel Kaim Shloch Manas Gam Kshemona Achasi Mashke. Umana achasi ochel lefisha shesia bechlal achila. And then he quotes one of the achronim. I don't know who this is. Matas Elokim. And he writes to Rabbi Oshias kavi lomer shafilu mitzad derech eretz hayoroi shakotan yishla kodem legadol. Now, where does he see this? In the Pri Chodesh, I have no clue. Anyway, let's just learn it on its own, independent of the Pri Chodesh. Again, the Pri Chodesh is saying here that Rav Oshia's comment is, wow, you know, you taught us a new halacha, Rebbe, and you said that we can integrate a mashke into Mishloach Manos, that achila, that shesia is bechal achila. But he quotes an achron here, which again, I see as an independent statement, that Rav Oshia's, his pilus here, why was he so excited about this? Is that he wanted to show that Mishloach Manos overrides, if you will, trumps Derech Eretz. Where's the confrontation here between Derech Eretz and Mishloach Manos? He says that according to the laws, the rules that govern Derech Eretz, Hayoroi Shakotan Yishla Kodem Legadol, that Rebbe should not have sent to the Talmud, to Rav Oshia, until first Rav Oshia took the initiative. And he says the following, that the Chiddush of Rebbe is Shagadol Yishlach Kodem L'Katan. That it's even more important to make sure, you know, that the Gadol sends to the Katan. Shebekach Gorem Lo Yoser Simcha. Now again, when it says Gadol and Katan, this has nothing to do with the, you know, Rav Nosson Kamenetsky's book, The Making of a Gadol. You know, we're not talking about a Gadol in that sense. But it means that somebody who's more chashuv than someone else, you know, he's one of the leaders of the community, he's a great scholar, or he may be the president of the shul, lo aleinu, right? And he should send to so to speak, the lower echelon, because that's really the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos, to create simcha. Oh, v'zeh pirush, wow, this is pretty impressive, ish l're'ehu. The word ish always means chashuv, right? Adam chashuv. L're'ehu means regular citizen. Shagadol yishlach l'katan. And this was the message that Rav Oshia sent to Rebbe. Kiyamta banu rabbeinu, right? Let's take a look at the first word. He says, Kiyamta banu rabbeinu. Mishloach Manos Ish l're'ehu. An ish l're'ehu. That is pretty sharp. I don't know if you get excited about this. It's a whole other perspective on what this line means over here on the top Zion of it Beis. The way the Pre-Chodesh learns it, the Chiddush was that, Rebbe, you taught us that even a liquid could be incorporated in Mishloach Manos. And now we're saying, no, you taught us that a Rabbeinu, who sends Manos, that's the key of Ish L'Re'ehu, and he should take the initiative and not wait for the cut. Oh, now the Chidah adds another knetch here. Not only is it a super duper kiyum when the Gadol sends to the cut because it enhances the simcha of the cut and the recipient, but even more that, it's a heter. In other words, he's telling you that this is within the perspective of the mitzvah. Why? The afal gav da'ata Gadol mitanu. You demonstrated, Rebbe, that even though you're greater than us, adayin kiyamta mishloach manos ish l're'ehu. And your chiddush is that you don't take re'ehu literally, because re'ehu means velo mora rabo, right? There's a fear and an awe that you have to have for your Rebbe, so you can't call him re'ehu, but that re'ehu includes even someone who's caught in mimenu. You would have thought that re'ehu means that they have to be sort of on an equal level. But if somebody is greater, then he's not sending to re'ehu, you can't call him re'ehu. The answer is no, even he's considered bechlal re'ehu. I have a copy somewhere, a photocopy of a letter that Rav Soloveitchik sent to a Talmud who remembered him on Purim and sent him Mishloach Manos. And for an entire page, he thanks the Talmud, this Rav Soloveitchik, that you thought of me on Purim. Mm. And it revealed to me a whole other dimension, you know, that when the Rav came in to give Shia, but, you know, to us, it was always like, you know, you know, the last thing in the world is that there was any relationship. It was all very distant. We stood in awe of the Rebbe. But here, the Rebbe says, hey, a Talmud thought of me, and he, I don't know exactly who brought the Mishloach Manos by plane, you know, how he sent it. And the second half of the letter is all about where there's a mitzvah of simcha on Chanukah and Purim. So he starts the second part of the letter with Nun Bet, you know, as if this is a postscript. But really, the eager of the letter is the second part, after he thanks the Talmud for sending him Mishloach Manos. Now let's just read one more line. Rava, here's another story. Rava, Shadarle, he sent Mishloach Manos on Purim Mori Barmar to somebody by the name of Mori Barmar. And the Sfasemis writes that Mari Bar Mar was actually the son of Rabba. Mar here refers to Rabba. So he's a father who's sending Mishloach Manos to his own son. And again, we can say the same to Chidushim, that it's not really Re'ehu, but Kamashwa, and that's also called Re'ehu. That a father-son relationship is also considered Re'ehu. And secondly, that the Gadol sends to the Katan. It doesn't say that Mori Bar Mar sent to his father. You know, the father took the initiative. So it's very similar to what we saw before. Now, who is the Shliach? The Shliach was B'yad Abaye. And what did he send to him? Milei Taska de Kashva. This is called a Sak Molei Tmarim. Okay, that's only one mana. So he sent him a large bag of dates, and he sent him umale kasa kimcha de'avshuna, a cup full of flour that was made from baked, or I shouldn't say baked, I should say roasted kernels of wheat. They used to take kernels of wheat, it's sort of like our cereals today, and they used to roast it in the oven, so it was very soft when it went into the oven. But when it came out, it was very sweet. It had a sweetness of a taste. And it seems like he sent him two items, both of which were edibles, and both of which could enhance the Sudas Purim. Amalei Abaye turns to Rav and he says, Hashta Omar Mori. Okay, so, you know, this is already a more complicated part of the sugya, this part. So I think we'll stop here. Let's just make a note of where we got up to. So we're on Daf Zayin Amud Beis, and B'lidetta, we'll pick this up tomorrow. Yeah.